You're listening to Black Op Radio.
Video computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for 220K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T-minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T-minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanek.
Control room, you're on the air.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leno Sanek, and today we're speaking to author-researcher Joan Mellon. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Len.
It's a pleasure to be speaking to you again. I think people listening to Black Op Radio are aware of your previous books, but I thought we would just give a quick overview of some of the topics you've written about regarding the JFK assassination. And this new book that you've got is a little different venue, but I'm always interested in anything you write about. So
the new book is like a memoir. It's about my life as a researcher, and so it connects to my books about the Kennedy assassination, and it has some of my adventures doing that research, and then it shows it. Then I get involved, and then I'm there, and who am I, and what kind of person, and what's going on with me, and so it's a little more personal than the other books.
Right. You were following Jim Garrison's work on the case, and that, I think, is that what got your interest in the JFK assassination?
What got me interested at first, the first thing was Mark Lane.
Mark Lane, okay.
And we talked about Mark Lane when Mark Lane died. What happened was everybody knew he was questioning the official version of things. He had rented a church, and he had been speaking about just people. It didn't cost anything. You could go down there and hear it. And it just raised issues. That what we were being told was not what was true. And so that led to the whole field, in my opinion. I think someone said to Mark Lane, I'm repeating a story maybe everybody knows. Someone said, well, what do you think of that what you really created a whole a monstrosity in this field? And Mark Lane said something to the effect, I'm trying to get this right, that it was like Frankenstein unleashed the monster and you didn't know what was coming next.
Yeah.
And he was right about that. It was like a monster. It really was.
Right. Now, as an author, where can people find out more about your previous works?
You can find, I have a website called joanmellon.com. And of course, there's also our friend Amazon, where all my books, or many of my books, are for sale. Or you can just call me up.
Right.
I'm in Pennington, New Jersey.
So I know your work from the Jim Garrison angle, and also you wrote on Cuba, Our Man in Haiti as well, I believe, and then about the attack on the ship.
The USS Liberty.
Liberty, yeah.
That's called Blood in the Water, and it has to do with a conspiracy, if you want to use that word, we can still use that word, to attack this U.S. intelligence ship, unarmed ship, no guns, nothing, and they were hit by Israeli ships. And if you think that's shocking, look at the newspaper today. So
yeah.
I learned a lot about the Mossad and what was going on and the United States' involvement in the attack. The Israeli ships attacked the Liberty, but it was all organized by the U.S., and in particular, James Angleton.
You know, if you haven't studied a few of these incidents in history, I think even with the Liberty, you would be just shell-shocked. You know, you go, hey, this can't be true, this can't be true, and then you look into it. And then that kind of reminds me of people, their reactions to 9/11, right? When you say no,
right.
It wasn't some guys with a box cutter. I mean, those, you know, buildings had to have been pre-wired. You know, how did Building 7 fall on a dime, you know, in its own footprint? So anyway, those are other topics. Okay, good. Well, your new book is Sherlock Being Catfished. And Sherlock, that was your nickname?
Sherlock was a nickname that I had, I'm proud to say. It was given to me by a New Orleans police detective named Robert Burris, who was the half of the New Orleans team investigating for the House Select Committee when they worked in the late 1970s. And Robert Burris was one of the New Orleans team. And he started to talk to me. Very intelligent guy, very distant, not involved with anything or anyone or Garrison or anything. And he just took a shine to me. I guess I took a shine to him because he had been in New Orleans police intelligence, not just a policeman. And he knew all about the methods of investigating intelligence operations, like the Kennedy assassination. And he was astounded at the corruption of the House Select Committee. And he made his views known. And one of the things that shocked him the most, for example, was the committee, he and his partner, were given a list of people that they could talk to. And they had to be people that had already been talked to and that were on the record, and they couldn't talk to anyone else. So he had wanted to talk to Dr. Frank Silva, who was a psychiatrist in Baton Rouge, and his partner, Patricia Orr, just refused to do it. And she was in charge of the project, and he couldn't do it. He was furious. It was absolutely because he was not corrupt at all. Although many of the New Orleans Police Department were, he wasn't, never. And he wanted to do the right thing always. Anyone you speak to who knows him or has worked with him will tell you that. So I'm so happy that he's calling me Sherlock. So I'm just proud of that. I wear it like a badge of honor. It means that I'm an investigator too, just like him and other people. And I any leads that he gave me, I followed, and I had a tremendous relationship with him.
Right. Well, it goes to show that in his eyes, you were an investigator with some respect due. You know that I've always admired your books and writing and going through that. So some people in the research community, you see a book, you go, well, how the hell did this even get published? But I have enjoyed your work.
Thank you, Lynn. I appreciate that a lot. And I work very hard. And I'm not special or anything, but I worked very, very hard. And I followed all the leads I had. And I didn't care where it led or who it criticized. And if Walter Sheridan, for example, in the Garrison investigation led to Bobby Kennedy, too bad. That was what happened. That was the truth. And Bobby Kennedy has sent character Walter Sheridan to thwart Jim Garrison's investigation. The proof was enormous. But you know, there are some people that won't look at facts no matter what they say. Anyway, Burris had no patience with anything like that, and we just proceeded. And I even caught pneumonia one night. He was trying to show me all the places near Guy Bannister's old office, 544 Camp Street, and all that where the CIA was and where the Riley Coffee was. And it was pouring rain, and we're tramping around in the rain. And when I got back to home a day later or so, I had pneumonia for 2 weeks or more. This is the price, right? You pay. You have to sacrifice yourself. I didn't even think of it that way. It was raining, so what? You don't get opportunities to get a guided tour of the sites of the Kennedy assassination in New Orleans by a person who was the head of the House Select Committee investigation. This doesn't happen every day. I was happy. I just did what I had to do. So there.
Yeah.
I was Sherlock. So I consider that I earned the nickname Sherlock. And I turned it on myself in this book, Sherlock Being Catfish, because after all, I'm a fool in this book. I'm really not very smart, and I don't do the right things. I don't know the right things. I don't protect myself in the right ways, and I just can't help myself.
Okay, so this new book, Sherlock Being Catfished, that's kind of a nickname where you're tricked, hoodwinked into something, or you buy somebody's biography, or you know that it's not true. And so I guess I should just turn it over to you and let you start at the beginning. And what chain of events led you to writing about this?
I don't really know. You just do it, you know, in writing. But what happened was there were a lot of messages that I had gotten on Facebook. And I didn't like Facebook or anything to do with it. But there were these messages, and people would be asking questions about Garrison. And then there was one that was asking questions about myself. And I was so distracted that I didn't know that this is different from the others. It's one thing to call it write about Garrison and what had happened, and there's another thing to be telling you that they're in love with you, and that you should even take it seriously. You should. Why are you doing that? Why stop? You should stop yourself immediately. And above all, I did stop myself. And I think part of the story is the quest. What are they looking for? You might ask. They're looking for money, of course. And I managed at the last minute by the skin of my teeth not to send any money, because the person said there was an accident. He was a logger. He's supposedly a logger in Cuba. And I had written a book about Cuba called The Great Game in Cuba. And I love that book. It's about CIA in Cuba. That's my usual topic. And I supposedly knew about Cuba. So this man says he's in Cuba. And it didn't occur to me. Well, don't you think maybe he better prove that he's in Cuba? But I just wanted to trust it. I wanted to believe it. It seemed that he was so charming and attractive, and I don't know what the word is, generous, but he wasn't. And I believe what he said. I believe that he was a logger in Cuba. And then when the climax of the whole event occurred, and he suddenly he never calls me up. It's always on email. He said, there's been an accident, and the big machine, the machine that cuts the logs is broken, and somebody is in the hospital, and I need $15,000, right, like now, tomorrow. You know, you can wire money. I mean, I have no acquaintance with any of this, but you can, if you really want to, send people money, you can do it immediately. And so he said, well, send me this money, please. My whole life depends on it. I'll never leave you. And this has been going on now for a month, I would say. And I believe him, and I'm about to send the money. I said, well, I don't even know where to contact you, because I only had the email. And he suddenly gives me an instructions with a name and a bank account and an address in Las Vegas, not Cuba. And he says, send this money. I'm desperate. My whole life depends on it. And I'm just about to, I call my bank. You know, you can wire money. It's easy, very fast. If there's money in your account, it's your money. So I call the bank, and the bank says, no, you have to come in person. So I make an appointment for the next day. And then the next day comes, and by the time the next morning comes, I don't want to do it anymore. And I don't do it. And the money did not go there. No, not one. If you had sent the money, if anyone had sent the money, you could never get it back after that point. Once money is wired, it goes into the, I don't know where it goes, but it disappears and you never get it back. So I would have lost all that money, and maybe he would have asked for more money. I was watching a show called Dr. Phil. Everyone, I don't know if you know that in Canada, Dr. Phil.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so Dr. Phil had various victims of catfishing on, and they had all lost a lot of money, like hundreds of thousands of dollars in that department. And once they sent it was over. You could not get it back. Even the FBI couldn't get it back. Nobody could get it back. And I went to the FBI website, and I filled out their, they have an application you can fill out even to tell what happened. And then they never answered me, and I understood it, because they'd been very good to me. When I was doing the research on Malcolm Wallace, my book called Faustian Bargains, I wanted his FBI file. And at that time, it was so redacted, you couldn't read it. It was black, always splashed. You couldn't see it. So I wrote to the FBI, and lo and behold, and I don't know how this happened, they sent me the whole file, the unredacted file. And that was how I had the help. So when I was doing this, I thought, well, maybe I need something else bad happened. Should we go into another, a slightly other topic?
Sure, go ahead, right?
So in any case, what happened was that I was about to speak. It was during the November, you know, anniversary period of the Kennedy assassination. I was going to speak at a conference outside New Orleans, sponsored by a woman who had said she had been a lover of Lee Harvey Oswald. So I went because it was back to Jim Garrison, and I had to give a speech. And who was Jim Garrison? I was going to do it no matter what. So although I didn't know who she was really, I never actually had encountered her in any of my research, I went. And I was then got a telephone call from someone whom you might know of called Roger Stone. Do you know that name?
Of course, yeah. Everyone knows Roger Stone. I mean,
okay, we're in the world
of
we're in...
a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back, eh?
Exactly. Exactly. I have a photo of that in the book, a cartoon actually, of Stone and Trump together, which I found, my student Audrey found it. In any case, I'm talking on some radio program because Roger Stone had a book about the Kennedy assassination that said that Lyndon Johnson did it. I think that was the title of it. Lyndon Johnson killed JFK. So I said something about his book on the radio. I don't know, what was it, your show? Could it have been your show? No. Did I talk about that on your show? I don't remember. But in any case, I talked about it. And then I said, but there are known footnotes. If you look at that book to try to see the sources and how he comes to that conclusion, you won't find any footnotes. Now, what you did find, you do find notes, but these are all notes to secondary sources, not to actual research, not to any new information or anything that anyone didn't know. Anyway, he said, if you come to that conference, you'll meet bodily harm. So I'm terrified by this because I'm afraid of this guy. I think that anything could happen. And should I go on with this, Len? Is that all right?
That's fine. This is in your book as well. But yeah, I don't mind. I think anyone here listening wants to hear whatever you got to say.
Well, I wanted to show the scope of the book.
Right, right.
And so what happened was I didn't know what to do. I called my lawyer. He didn't know what to do. So finally I call... I go to the conference, but before I go, I call the FBI. That was what I was talking about, the FBI. And the FBI had been so kind to me about giving me Malcolm Wallace's file that I thought, well, maybe they'll help me. So I call the FBI, and they listen to what I have to say, and they say, we'll call you back. And they called me back in a week, and it was a woman agent, who was a resident agent in Trenton, New Jersey. And she said he works for Donald Trump. And but I tell her the whole story. And I then go to the conference and I think to myself, well, I'll tell the organizer of the conference that I have called the FBI about this threat. And if anything happens to me, they'll have it on record. So that's what happened. I went to the conference. I gave my speech about Jim Garrison. His sons were there. I was really happy about that. And then I don't go to Roger Stone's event, and he doesn't come to mine. And that's what it. And then it ends. He tells his audience, however, they tell me that he'll sue me for $42,000. Now, where that figure came from, I have no idea. But that's what he said, and that's the end of it. Now, how did we get onto that? It's part of the book. It's part of the story.
Right, it's but you were talking about. Oh, sorry. How were you asking me? You were just recalling about the FBI, how you were asking them for help, and you'd asked them before in the past, right?
I never asked directly. I mostly asked, of course, for unredacted files. Please send me the file of such and such. And then last time when they gave me that complete file, I was so happy. It made my book. That was a book called, as I said, Faustian Bargains. It really, it helped me with my book about to find out, did Malcolm Wallace have anything to do with the Kennedy assassination? That was the topic of that book. And I answered the question based on a lot on the FBI file, including, and my research, and called it a day. Now, I don't know how, why, but that's sort of the periphery of the research of the Sherlock part of the story of the FBI. I don't, you never know. I mean, the FBI was on the run. I don't know why they acted so kindly and reasonably, but they did.
Right. Okay. And then you had said that in this new case, you went to an FBI site to fill out your details about if you had been catfished, whatever the term. You want to get into the term catfished?
The term catfished is on a documentary film on MTV, which has to do with a story about a fishing village where the fishermen send catfish. They send cod. They're shipping cod to China. And the cod arrives at China weak and debilitated. They're useless. You can't eat them. They're gone. So then somebody comes up with the idea of putting catfish into the tank with the cod on a trip to China. And the catfish nip on the fins of the cod, and it sort of awakens them, keeps them awake and alive, and they come to and they arrive in China well, ready to be eaten by the Chinese, but it's not exactly a happy ending. But they at least they get to China safe and sound. So that's where that comes from. It comes from that story about shipping codfish to China with catfish in the tank. But of course, it's not really, it's not, it's an analogy.
Yeah.
It has to do with how people are overcome by people who exploit them, who lie to them, who cheat them, and who destroy them and hurt them, tell them. Now, I mean, I don't know what the catfish said to the cod in the tank, but here in the real life story of catfish, if you want to catfish somebody and get them to send you a lot of money, what you do is you have to tell them that you're in love with them. That this is a romance, and that this you have a new, you're going to have a life together, you're going to be together, and then of course it comes to nothing, and you're just you're robbed of your money and your self respect, and your equilibrium, and you don't you're not very happy, are you? But it's a very widespread phenomenon, and everyone of certain generations know about it. I didn't know. I never heard of it. When this happened to me, I never heard of it. But my student, Audrey, who works for me, knew immediately what it was. And in fact, behind my back, eventually, as this went on, she blocked the guy from my Facebook account. So he couldn't write to me anymore. Huh?
Well,
because she knew him. She had no doubt. She had no doubt whatsoever that this was a scam and that this was I was going to be cheated out of a lot of money.
I guess, and good for the bank, too, for saying, look, we've got to come down in person because we just want to ask you, like, what is this? If you're going to buy a car, no problem. But they see this so often now, people that are unsuspecting.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. And that's the good thing about you writing the book is that, you know, for people who are unexpecting, I didn't think it could happen, and it happened to me. And just luckily, you were able to put a stop to it.
I was, but the bank would not allow it to happen. I don't know who called the bank originally. Maybe it was the FBI. Maybe the FBI has warned the banks not to allow people to wire money like this. Because one of the things that the banker said to me was, how well do you know these people? Because I didn't know them at all. I never met this guy. I never met him. I never laid eyes on him. He never tried to call me even on the telephone. He never said, never. Just that was it. And in fact, one time, I'm so naive. You think, he sent me a photograph, which is in the book, of a bouquet of red roses. So I see this, and I think, oh, how nice. Look at those beautiful roses. And I'm thinking, when are they going to arrive? I'm thinking it's real. Because it's not real. It's a picture. It's always was a picture, and it was going to be a picture. But I'm so stupid that I actually how does he know where to send roses to me anyway? He doesn't know my address.
You should have had a stack of $15,000, taken a picture and sent the picture to him.
That's a funny idea. That's clever. Very clever. Because, yes, and that was so rude, wasn't it? That was so mean and hard, not a nice person. But you know what, Lynn? I have to tell the truth of this as a cautionary tale, as you say, for people who might fall for this. I thought I was in love with this guy. He was very handsome. He looked like George Clooney, or maybe not exactly like George Clooney, but maybe he looked like, you know, the singer Jimmy Buffett?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, the picture looks like that. You can't really be sure what he looked like.
That's true. Who knows whether this picture was him? Where did they get the picture? The whole thing was a fraud. And, you know, when it was over, want to hear something? When it was over, I'm looking in on Google, who I'm looking, you know, on Google, and suddenly I see catfishing, and I see an article in the Atlantic Monthly magazine, which was about a logger who was interviewed for the Atlantic, and it had exact sentences that he had. In other words, he plagiarized. I'm an English teacher. Should I know that? He plagiarized the article. So my father was this, and I loved logging, and the word for word into what he wrote me in the emails came from this article in the Atlantic that he got on Google. Huh. That's what the English teachers do, you know, when they want to find out whether someone is plagiarizing something. You just type in the words on Google and see if it comes up anywhere. One of my students once plagiarized a film called The Fight Club, pretty well-known film, The Fight Club. And it was identical, so I didn't have to say anything. The rest of the class read it, and they saw that, and that's the Fight Club. And so, of course, they exposed him. It was all over for him. I had already read The Fight Club, and I had also reviewed it. But I forgot it. It was several years earlier. So anyway, that happened. So I'm involved with plagiarizing, cheating, lying. I hate lying. And there it is. You just can't avoid it, really. So what I'd have to say, if you ask me, do I give any advice about this? Number one, don't send money. Audrey would never let me send money. That was her. That's her. She's called millennial. That's her generation is millennial. And they are very tough. And she just wouldn't let me to do that. But if I did it behind her back, then it's on me. I dedicated the book to her because I thought she's so cute. And so she was in my creative writing program at Temple University. And she was a wonderful writer. Her thesis was about the school shootings. I can't remember which one it was based on. And then after it was over, when she graduated, she decided she didn't want to do it anymore. Now, the life of a writer is no great fun, and it's really hard. And you get rejected a lot, and you don't get reviewed. You do get reviewed. You get bad reviews. You try to get things, and you don't get them. And I can understand where somebody watching this under before her eyes wouldn't want to be involved in it herself. So I forgive her for that, even though naturally I was disappointed, because I want my students to be successful and to be writers and to be published and all of that. But it's not that easy. And so I have to laugh at all of this. And I consider this book, when I look at Sherlock being catfished, I say to myself, this is a comedy. This is really funny. And so we try to make the cover as humorous as possible. It has a very, very ugly catfish on a platter. And then there's a woman there that looks like Sherlock. She's older. And she has a magnifying glass in her hand and a hat, like Sherlock Holmes, and she's trying to figure things out, and her subject is a catfish, which is ridiculous, but that's what it was. Anyway, this just takes a little humor and away from the seriousness and also the craziness of the Kennedy assassination. I mean, look at Robert Kennedy Jr., for example, which is disappointing, isn't it? He isn't anything like his uncle or his father. And one of the things that I put him in the book, because it disturbed me in a way that he didn't come to me and say, well, tell me about my father and his involvement in the Garrison investigation. What did he do? What was his attitude toward Garrison? And, of course, what he was trying to stop Garrison from investigating. And Jim Garrison went on television, WABC TV, and he said, if it were my brother, I'd want to know what happened to him. That was a direct quote. And, of course, so, yes. So what's going, what is all this? What's going on? What is all this craziness with vaccines and whatnot? So, I don't know. You can't, you have to forgive me for turning to this kind of a topic that's kind of different, like romantic scams and deceptions and loneliness and wanting to be connected to people. And I had retired from teaching at this time when I started this book. And so that left me with a kind of void in my life. I was so dedicated teaching.
Joan, it was like June in 2023?
Yeah.
Right. So it's not that far back. The interesting thing is that this can happen to anyone, and it's a cautionary tale that this is what's going on. And you have to be cynical, even if somebody emailing you and offering praise in your work or your books or that, and then you find out they never really did read them. But on the surface, you have to be a little more jaded these days, and everybody's got these things about a Nigerian letter. I'm a king, and you inherited $25 million. Can you send me $5,000 to help transfer the money back? You know what I mean? It's just, you hear of these, but here was somebody that we know you, and it happened to you. So
happened to me, and it almost happened. It really almost, I almost lost $15,000. That's a lot of money to me, and maybe not to everybody, but to me, that is a big amount of money, and it's your savings. It's what is it? And it happened, and the person doesn't care at all. And in fact, when I look back at the emails that he sent me about the money, he needs the money, he never really asked, can you afford this? Is that hard for you? How will you, anything remotely, what would you have done with that money or anything like that? No questions like that at all, because basically they don't care about you. That's known as a scam. That's a scam. And in any relationship, in fact, where they don't ask the right questions and they don't care ask you about you, you have to wonder about it and maybe put a stop to it or put a halt on it. Anyway, so here I am with this book. And I have a nice publisher, and his name is Chris Milligan, from Trine Day. You probably have encountered him. And he just, I sent it to him. I didn't ask anything. And he said, I love it. So, wow. And that's not every day in every life that somebody says to you that you write a book, they love it. He didn't have to say that. So that's it. So I figured, well, that's over. I don't have to worry about selling it because he really liked it. He sort of found it funny, and I find it funny, too. And I also try to bring in as much cultural background as I can, books that I read or were involved in, books that reflected on it, movies, Japanese movies. There are a lot of Japanese movies that are discussed. I managed to find an analogy with a famous Japanese movie called The Pornographers, 1966 movie by Shohei Imamura, which is a great, great movie. And I describe the ending of that movie in this book, where the main character, who's really down and out, and he just gets into this little boat, and he has a life-size person. What do you call it? Like a rubber doll, life-size rubber doll. And he puts this rubber doll into the boat, and he sets sail into Tokyo Bay. No destination. Excuse me. And that's how it ends. And I mean, that is so fantastic, that movie. So if anybody knows the movies of Shohei Imamura, if you know Japanese movies at all, this is a world to open up. And I also discuss Rashomon, and I also discuss Garcia Marquez, my favorite novelist. And I discuss a novel that he wrote called Love in the Time of Cholera, which describes a love affair of older people. And they said, they also set sail in a boat. That's a common theme, isn't it? They set sail on the Magdalena River, and the captain of the boat puts up a yellow flag. And what the yellow flag means is there's cholera on board, and that means that no one will come aboard, and so they'll be safely alone and happy in these last years of their life. And that's sort of a very romantic movie, and maybe it's not a movie, it's a novel. And it's unforgettable. So I brought in to this book all unforgettable movies, stories, novels that meant a lot to me. So in a way, it's like a spiritual autobiography. And at the end, I really wanted to see this man. I wanted to meet him at the end, but I never did. And there's even a television show called The Catfish. And so the hosts of this show take up your case. It's like a case. And if they take it up, they'll find the person for you and bring you together with them.
Wow.
And I didn't have the nerve to go to do it. I didn't do it. But
you know, the whole story was so elaborate that it crossed my mind a few times that wonder if it's an AI, artificial intelligence. Somebody says, if she says this, reply with that. If somebody says this, reply with that. And they have an but anyway, you know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
And one of the things about it is that one of the things they say on the Catfish television show is they say, if the person won't telephone you, it means that they're a different gender. If you're expecting a man, it's really a woman writing to you. So Audrey and she decided that it's got to be a woman writing these emails. It's not, even though the emails are in the book, but we don't know for sure if it's a man or a woman, because we don't know. We've never seen. And if they don't call you up on the phone and you don't hear their voice, how do you know what gender the person is? Well, I don't even know now.
So Chris from Trine Day loved it right away, and he signed up for that. So I'm assuming that it's available now?
It's available right now on Amazon. They published it immediately, which is and only also with Bow Down and Thank You for that, because usually it takes a year and a half or so to get a book out on the stands. And it's out he put it out in several months, took several months, and he got it done. And you can find it now on Amazon.com.
Very good. I'll make a link to that for you. Well, I read it, and it's quite a tale.
Did you like it?
Yeah. The thing is, it's you know, some small percentage uncomfortable, because I had the feeling right away, oh, of course. I mean, the title's called Catfished, so this is the story of someone pretending to lure someone in with compliments and this and that. And so, you know, as I'm getting to the end, I go, I hope you don't send it. I hope you turn it, you know, listen to the banker, you know, like, I hope this doesn't turn out bad. The one thing about it.
It always turns out bad, because my heart was broken. I'm talking to you in a normal way now. I'm enjoying talking to you, but it hurt very much, because I really thought that my life was solved. Now I had somebody in my life that I didn't have before. And, you know, at one point in the story, I go to a Met game. I don't know if, do you know the Mets, the team, the Mets?
Yeah, everyone, yeah.
I thought everyone knew, but just the same.
Yeah.
So anyway, I go to the game, and I'm thinking, if only he were with me, I would be so happy.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm imagining sitting up there in the Met and watching the game. Meanwhile, I'm with two people that are Phillies fans, that's the other side. And I'm just thinking, I'm in a cocoon. I'm happy, and I have this person in my life, and we're watching the Mets. It's a fantasy. I guess that's what it is. You make a life different from what it really is.
And their ulterior motive, like you said, is to scam someone, to somehow...
The ulterior motive is money. Money. We want money. We want thousands. And, you know, you think that they ask you for $50,000, but they know most people can't give $50,000. So they think of an amount that is possible that people could give. And there's a manual that Dr. Phil talks about on the show, and it says, go for older women because they have more money. And I think that's, of course, probably true. So he figured $15,000 was what I could afford. And that would be what was possible. And so that's what he asked for. It's surprising. It surprised me that he didn't ask for more.
And like you say,
but anyway,
he never spoke to him. So your assistant implied that because of the creativity of the writing or the flowery nature of it, it was probably written by a woman.
We concluded that there's certain language. There was also bad English. Now, I'm an English teacher. You think that I'd know. So I see bad English and I say, oh, that's okay. I say to myself, that's okay. I don't really care about grammar, but I do. And what am I doing with somebody that can't speak English? And what am I? And I don't. Then we don't even know for sure that he's an American, that he's a native speaker. The whole thing is a sham of some kind. He's not an American. There's no way. And he never knew. He didn't know. There were certain things that he didn't know. Number one, and this would be interesting to your audience, he didn't know. He was had no interest whatsoever in the Kennedy assassination. Number two, he didn't know who the Mets were. He didn't know who Bob Knight was, a basketball coach, Bob Knight in the U.S., and who died recently. He's a friend of mine.
This, hasn't everyone seen him throw that chair?
Fair enough, yes. And he didn't know who that didn't ring a bell with him. He didn't know anything. So, I mean, and anyway, the Mets, as you say, everybody knows the Mets. And I went to this game of the Mets, where the Mets threw the season. That was last summer. They just completely destroyed their own season with this game. And it was plain to see. It was a tragedy. It was horrible. And he doesn't even register what's happening. He's reading emails, of course. But he didn't really care whether the Mets won or lost, did he? Anyway, aren't we? I think that at the end of it, I wanted to see him. I hope he'd call me. Please, at least let him write me, let him email me. And then by the time another month had gone by, I didn't care anymore. Which that should be the cautionary tale to all the listeners to whom this happens. Somebody can seem so interesting and so ideal, and then gone. You don't care, and the feeling dissolves. It doesn't really last.
Well, it would have dissolved a lot quicker if you found out that you did send the money, and then that was the last time you heard of him, right? So
that's right. One of the things I was curious about putting in the book was the scene with General Patrick Hemming at the very beginning of the book, when I go to Hemming's house and I start discussing the Kennedy assassination with him, and I try to bring what really happens in these interviews. Do you really believe the person? Do they make sense to you? Whether you can, and whether what they told you was really true. And a lot of the things that Jerry Hemming told me were true, and they turned out to be true. And that's it. And when he said to me, the only person that I'm afraid of was Bernie. He used the word Bernie. And I didn't know who that was. And I said, Bernie who? I say. And he says, just Bernie, and closes the subject. And I think it took 5 years from that day till the time that he actually delivered me to the house of Angela Kennedy, and we discussed Bobby, and we discussed Bernie, and his visitors to the Sylvia Odio. And you don't really know what's going to happen, do you? You don't know what's true and what isn't. That's true whether it's a catfish, whether it's Gerald Hemming, whoever it is, it's very, very hard to get the truth, to get the facts.
Okay, Joan, well, thanks for writing this book, Sherlock Being Catfished. It's, once you know, so many things happen almost daily, just, you know, every day, the whole month of June, you write it down like a diary. And
right.
And then that's how it goes. I don't want to give too much away, but anyway, that's the topic of the book. And like you said, it's a cautionary tale. If it happened to me, it could happen to you.
It happened to me. And actually, thank you very much, Len, for putting me on your program, Black Op Radio, and discussing it, because I'm always have fun on Black Op, and I never know what's going to happen next. And here I am. Thank you.
Well, no, you're very welcome. And also, I think a lot of researchers and listeners know you from your work in the JFK field. So it's just, you know, I found it a pleasant distraction that, you know, here's something out of left field, and I didn't expect this, but I don't think you expected it either. So it's good that you wrote about it, because I wonder how many people did something like this or lost some money, and they just, I'm never going to tell anyone. I'm so embarrassed, right? So
that's right. And also, I didn't want to protect myself. I wanted to tell what really happened. So I did.
Okay. Okay, so the book is available on Amazon. We'll make a link. And thanks to Chris at Trine Day for picking it up. And an interesting book. And there's a lot to it, and there's tidbits of JFK research and anecdotes about that as well, so it's not totally out of the thing. But anyone who's going to enjoy Joan's writing, we hope you pick up the book.
Thank you, Lynn.
Good. Before we wrap up then, is there anything else you wanted to just bring up that I didn't get to?
No, it's okay.
All right.
I hope anybody who wants to read it and write me or call me, please do it.
Right, okay. All right, then. Thank you so much, Joan, for sharing your time with me today.
Thank you, Lynn.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
Good night.